Break!
Okay.
These are the colors I need. Blue razzleberry and sour apple.
If anybody has black parts, I need them, okay? I only work in black. And sometimes very, very dark gray.
Use the yellow bricks.
You guys, can I help?
No, it has to be this way. No, I need that.
Where is he?
Anyone know what this is, and do you need it?
I think we could use wings, rocket boosters.
Ew, get your retro space stuff out of my area.
You guys, hey, just tell me exactly what to do and how to do it.
Podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And this is episode 33. I only work in black, or sometimes very, very dark grey. We're going to be talking about...
Well, pale grey. Sprue grey for you, to be exact.
I really like that clip. I really do like that clip. That's why it's used. We're going to be talking painting requirements and tournaments and some of the variations that happen around the world in regards to standards of painting and maybe why you should or maybe why you shouldn't have to or have painted your armies or battle forces in the past. It's a question that I saw come up, which got quite heated on one of the Facebook groups I'm in, and I thought it was worth further discussion.
Oh, I missed that.
It got a lot of conversation, and some of it got less sensible. So it's a good opportunity to have a chat about why we like painted armies and forces and why some of our events don't require it and some of them do. So... we're going to have a chat about that in just a minute. But before we do, we have
just
to...
Before we do that, I'm just going to clarify all of our 40K events require fully painted armies.
Yeah, but we also run things like...
I know, but I'm just saying, I don't want anybody hearing this and going, oh, I didn't know that.
We're going to talk about all of that in the topic. But we're going to say a couple of quick shout outs and thank yous. First of all, thank you to all our patrons for supporting us through the Patreon page. If you want to check it out, you can head to patreon.com/objectivesecured. There's a whole bunch of benefits, including an additional podcast every month that you can listen to.
And the benefit for us is that it's just paid for the web hosting for the next 2 years.
Yes, it has. So we're very grateful to all the patrons for helping us out in that regard and making our lives that little bit easier in covering some of the costs that we incur. So thank you very much to... We have 13 of them now, which is very exciting for us. And a special shout out to Five Titans in Nevada for... their support as well. We're looking forward to their store opening and seeing some of the work, and we've got some cool photos coming from them, and very excited for Josh and his team. But let's move on now. What have we had happen in the last couple of weeks? We had the Toy Soldier Cartel run their doubles event, which we mentioned in the last podcast.
So that was an invitational doubles event, and it was slightly different to the way that we run our doubles event in that the pairing was randomly allocated.
Yeah, so they had 20 guys meet up first thing in the morning. They paired them up randomly, and then they played. It was meant to be 5 rounds. They ended up cutting it down to 4 just to time constraints, which I think was a really sensible call by Courtney and the team. It was going to be a very long day otherwise.
Well, I imagine it was still a very long day.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But they had a good spot. It wasn't too hot. They had a nice warehouse space, and I got some live video while I was down there. Danger Rod went down with... he got paired up with one of the guys down there, Vince, who's actually written for us about Shadespire just prior to show 2018. So it was great to see so many faces down there. If you've come to any of our events, a lot of the faces would have been very familiar to you. Guys like Brad, all the Toy Soldier Cartel, obviously. Yeah, it was really great to see everyone out and playing some cool games of 40K. Obviously, one of the big advantages for doubles events is you need far less tables and terrain. So despite there being 20 people, it was only 5 tables, which...
I must admit, I do love that about the doubles events we run. 64 people in the room, but... Yeah.
It's like 16 tables.
16 tables. Sweet.
So, they had a really good day. And we had a few little hiccups at the start of the day to kick it off with the software, but all sorted by lunchtime and rock and roll.
Yeah. So one of the things that's just sort of popped into my head, the reason that we share about some of the hiccups that we experience is about the transparency there.
Yeah.
And it's part of what we do to, I guess, build community, is sharing our vulnerabilities and saying, you know what, we try our utmost to create amazing events and, you know, to put on flawless days. Doesn't work.
No.
Stuff goes wrong. There's always stuff that goes wrong. We do everything we possibly can to prepare and plan and minimize things that go wrong. And we, you know, we run around behind the scenes and we try and make sure that it doesn't impact players in any way, shape or form, or impacts them in the minimal amount possible. But things go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's completely okay.
And we're very fortunate that we have a good support network and that Down Under Pairings is run by a good friend of ours, and he was able to help out the boys at Toy Soldier Cartel to get the event up and running. And then when I got down there, I helped make a few extra changes because I'm more familiar with the software than they are.
Mm-hmm. But that's exactly what it's about. It's about sharing that knowledge. And by sharing the knowledge, we create that stronger community.
Yeah. So, everyone had a good time. I had a good time with it last year. Unfortunately, due to some family commitments, I couldn't attend to play this year, but I did get a chance to nick down and see everyone. Mm. So, yeah, well done to Courtney and the team for putting that on. We've also, we released our first tickets for our annual First Blood event that happens at the start of each year. It's the fourth year we've run it, and this year we sold it out in under 24 hours for 60 players.
Yes.
Which was super exciting, and I think everyone, myself included, was a bit shocked by how quickly they went.
I wasn't. No, though.
I mean, the first year we did okay. The second year we did really well. The third year we sold out in about 3 days, and we saw people trying to scalp tickets on Facebook, which was exciting.
Yeah. Having said that, we were able to have more spaces last year. We've had a few issues with venue, which has meant that we can't. We've got a smaller venue this year, so we do have to limit it to only 70 players.
Yeah, so we sold the 60 public release tickets almost instantly. The patrons' tickets are currently being worked through at the moment with them. Mm-hmm. And then once they've purchased any tickets that they want, then we'll open the remaining up to the general public as well. So there should be another...
Yeah, but don't hold your breath. There's not going to be many at all.
It'll be somewhere between 2 and 6 tops. Mm-hmm. And I suspect it'll be closer to that sort of 2 to 4 mark than anything else. But they will go up as soon as we can lock away the patron spaces as well. But it's really exciting for us to see all the support and have everyone just jump on the chance to come out and play. So that's really cool. Mm-hmm. So we look forward to seeing everyone. That's about 4 weeks away,
oh my goodness,
give or take. So, yeah.
That's the 17th of February.
Yes, 17th of February. So that's really exciting for us. And there's obviously a few events between now and then. There's the day before that, actually, you've got Beyond Games and Hobby hosting their AOS event down in Bunbury. I know that the store manager for Games Workshop in Fremantle, Mitch, is taking 2 days off and he's going to do back-to-back Age of Sigmar on the Saturday and then 40K on the Sunday.
Oh, my goodness.
So, he's being very brave. And I know there's a few guys doing it.
I didn't realise that the Beyond, and I doubt that you did either, realise that Beyond Games and Hobbies was on at the same weekend. Otherwise, we would have booked for a different
weekend. I mean, we obviously always try and avoid conflicts. And the only solace I take in this is one is Age of Sigmar and one is 40K. So we're not at least trying to pull from the same pool of people in theory. Although, obviously, there is always crossover.
Crossover, yeah.
But yeah, look, that's it's exciting to see that there are guys who are willing to do the drive to Bunbury one day and then come to South Perth the next day for us. So, and
I'm sure awesome if there's some girls that do that too.
Yeah, well,
This is the tricky thing. We don't know whether or not we have any female players coming to First Blood, because that although we've had some female names come through on tickets, we're not sure whether they've bought those for themselves or for partners.
Yeah. It is one that we have to kind of give a couple of weeks to, and then once the lists start being due, then or get closer to being due, then we'll start chasing up who's who. But you know, it's exciting. There are a bunch of new names on the list again this year, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
We had a few friends of ours get in touch. Most of them got tickets, thankfully, because we don't hold anything. We just release them. And Richard, who writes for us. He's written a couple of articles on the website recently about his Custodes army. He got ticket 59 of 60.
Ooh.
So, and then when we announced we only had one more spot, it went
within
a second later.
Yeah.
So it's quite flattering, really. It's been really cool to see the response. And we're looking forward to First Blood. The other thing worth mentioning at the moment is Show 2019.
Mm-hmm.
We've been out and seen the venue. We are hoping to find out which of the two possible venues.
It will be at Claremont Showgrounds.
Yes, it will be. There's just a couple of pavilion options.
June 1, 2 and 3. And as soon as they tell us whereabouts within the showgrounds we will be, we will let you know which gate we're at and things like that.
Yeah. So. And we're working through some of the nitty-gritty at the moment with them around food and drinks and parking and all that other sort of stuff that comes into it. We can say for certain, though, the train line will be running for the weekend.
Yes.
So
and just depending on whereabouts we are within the showgrounds depends on which station we recommend you get off at.
So that's really exciting for us as well to have that as an opportunity to give you guys the ability to get to the event just that little bit easier if you do want to take the train from wherever you are in Western Australia. If you're coming in from overseas or interstate, I got that the right way around, didn't I?
Yes.
The Perth train station, obviously from the CBD, will get you out there, and there's train lines that kind of run from most of the major arteries of the city. So getting out to the venue shouldn't be too hard for you. It's a pretty central location this year, and plenty of space, plenty of parking, and we're already revising how it's going to be laid out because of the slight change in the way the venues are laid out. So as soon as we know more...
It's not a slight change, it's a massive
change.
We've gone from being over three floors to all in the one space.
Yes.
It's not some slight changes, it's a complete overhaul, rewrite.
Yeah, it's just technicalities, it's fine.
Yeah, clearly it's not him that's... rewriting the whole thing.
So, show 1st, 2nd and 3rd of June 2019 at Claremont Showgrounds, and keep your eyes out for tickets and for the formal releases of the events and the tournaments. And we're already talking to Micah and the D&D and Pathfinder and all the DMs who ran at Show 2018. They're all pumped to start running stuff for 2019, and we'll have vendor information and everything else out shortly. What else have we got to cover? Is there anything that we've got to cover? Oh, there is one thing I saw released today. Or was it yesterday? I forget. It was the FAQs for Chapter Approved and the Vigilus Book 1 and Wrath and Rapture for Age of Sigmar. They've all been released in the last 24 hours or so at time of recording. Nothing particularly surprising in there, although there was one FAQ which... I feel like the answer was way more polite than what I would have been able to manage, because the question was... Due to the acceptable casualties rules, which in 40k means that there are missions now where if you run out of models, if you actually get tabled, the game doesn't automatically end and you don't automatically lose.
Oh.
Which can create, because it's progressive scoring, it can create some really interesting scenarios. But someone got it into the FAQ and the question was, if I concede, does my opponent automatically win?
Mm-hmm.
And Games Workshop answered, yes.
Yeah.
Your opponent automatically wins. I can't help but feel that the editor in that particular case took out a sentence before, which was less polite, and it ended with the word yes, and probably used the word moron and...
Hey, no.
Who has to ask that?
I think implying that is fine. Don't outright call someone a moron for asking that.
If I've conceded something, you give up. Your opponent wins that. Like, how is that a question?
I don't know. I didn't write it.
It baffles me that actually made it into an FAQ. I don't understand.
Well, I guess they must have been asked a number of times in order to...
Which is even more disturbing. Yeah. Anyway, that was...
It makes sense to us that obviously if you concede, then your opponent wins. However, I suppose if I really stretch, I can understand that people may question that.
Well, I wonder whether... The only scenario I can come up with where that might actually be a question is... Say you get to turn 5 and you're ahead on points, but your opponent tables you.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the game still gets rolled 4 for 6 and rolled 4 for 7, and your opponent can obviously score more points, but you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, in theory, if you got to the end of turn 5, you were ahead on points, you had no models left, and you conceded, the game ends because you've conceded. Mm-hmm. And I could see someone trying to claim, well, the game's ended, but I've got more points, so I still win.
Mm.
And that's the only...
See, so there's a scenario where that could possibly have been asked.
But it's so ludicrous.
You know what? No judgment.
Oh, no. Plenty of judgment.
No judgment.
It's just weird.
Nope.
Other than that, though, I think we're up to date. We've been publishing a fair bit on the website and on the Facebook page, and we were live last Wednesday night again in another interesting rambling conversation with everyone. So
it's been a really long week. I'm not sure as I remember last Wednesday.
But so we're already gearing up for First Blood and show, and we'll have information for show as soon as we have it in the next week or two. But why don't we take a quick break and we'll start talking about painting requirements and all the different game systems that we help run stuff for and just why they might be different. Right, so this topic was actually one that I saw in one of the Shadespire groups, or sorry, the Warhammer Underworlds groups, I should say. I've got to get out of that habit. It's just what we knew the game
it's tricky, for so long.
But it happened in one of the Underworlds groups that I'm part of on Facebook, and the question was basically raised. It wasn't even raised. There was an article linked into it that basically said, "Stop shaming people for not painting their warbands."
Yep.
And the article in question was very, very short and basically said...
That seems to sum it all up, really.
Yeah. You know, we're a good community. Stop shaming people for not painting their warbands. And it ended up in quite a lengthy topic, which I don't know if it's been locked, you know, or if it's not been deleted or if it's still there. But it sparked a conversation with another gamer, a friend of mine, and I thought it'd be a good one to talk about with you tonight because... you play Underworlds, and I am painting the warbands for them.
I've also had absolutely no access to Facebook or anything today, so didn't get to read any of this.
So the article was really, really short, which basically went, you know, you do you, essentially, in terms of the hobby.
Yep.
But the sort of as the conversation developed, it was more about why should I paint, why shouldn't I paint, why do events have requirements for painting, you know, and why are there expectations around painted models? So
can I just start before we get into any of that, in that we do really advocate the you do you.
Yeah.
You know, so
within your general hobby space.
Yes, exactly. Within your general, so if painting isn't for you, then, you know, that is going to mean that you can't attend our 40K events or
some
Age of
our
Sigmar
events.
Yep. Or, you know, anything that's got a painting requirement. But that's your choice.
Yeah.
Everyone gets to choose. Like, we're never going to shame someone because they choose not to paint their models.
No. I know plenty of people don't find that component of the hobby engaging. Mm. And I think that's always going to be a personal preference. And I go through bouts of really enjoying painting and then other times hating it. So, whereas I know people who, that's their primary mode for being in the hobby. It's the real reason they're involved. The game is a secondary concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of that whole decision-making process actually stems from the game we're talking about. So, when you start, we'll start with Underworlds, because that's where this conversation started.
Sure.
The official Grand Clash rules that Games Workshops apply for organisers for that event.
Mm-hmm. Do not require painted warbands.
And the game itself is very definitely marketed in a different way to a lot of the other games that Games Workshop produces, in that it's snap-fit models.
Mm-hmm.
They literally click together and that's that.
Mm-hmm.
There have been people who've gone to tournaments at the stores, picked a warband up off the shelf with a pair of clippers, snapped them together and played a game on the spot.
Yep.
Low model count, snap fit models, and it's much closer to a board game than a miniatures game. It's skirting this weird line between the two because
it's a gateway drug.
Yeah. It's miniatures tabletop gaming, but it's on a board.
It's on a really small scale.
Yeah. So you have, on one hand, you have Games Workshop producing a game like this where it's very clearly not a necessity to have people involved in getting new people into the community, which is great. It's a really low entry level. The product itself is well priced. The warbands are well priced. So getting people into tabletop gaming of any sort at that point becomes much more accessible than something like Age of Sigmar or 40K.
I am just going to say, while we think that it's an affordable entry point and, you know, affordable price points, it's still a lot more expensive than buying Scrabble at Big W.
Look, absolutely. But then...
I'm just thinking that it depends what kind of board game you're comparing this to.
Yeah, so I'm
compare
actually...
Compare it to Kings of Tokyo or something like that. Sure, it's affordable.
Yeah, look...
Compare it to 40K, it's incredibly affordable. Compare it to Upwards and, yeah, not so much.
I think a lot of the time, though, there's two categories of board games these days. There's the sort
stuff
of...
that they sell at Target, yeah, they can, there's proper board games.
Yeah, they're consumer-driven... generic style, you know, your Monopolies and Scrabble and Twister and all of those other
I'm
sort
sure
of...
you can count Twister as a board game.
Look, maybe? I don't know. Ooh. I don't know what that class is as.
Oh, I guess if you're going to play with your Titans on the floor, I don't see why we can't call Twister a board game. It's just but, a really big board.
But then when you start talking about what most gamers understand as board games, you start talking about Settlers of Catan and Ticket to Ride, and then you move through... all of those big box games. And, I mean, obviously there's things like Sushi Go and Love Letter that are really nice and cheap. But what I'm saying is that Underworlds fits into that mold of, at least in Australia, that sort of $70 to $150 good board game. And obviously there's more expensive ones, and Shadespire has Underworlds, sorry, has its expansions, but it kind of sits in that space with Zombicide and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
In that it's accessible, it's generally stocked wherever those other sorts of games are. So if you're going looking for one of those sort of, I suppose, more specific board games, then you will often find Underworlds there. And I know that it's shown up in the States, at least in some of the major department stores, which is interesting as well. Whereas here, we obviously are still limited to...
No, I really can't see it turning up in Kmart.
If it does, it better be cheap. So there's obviously the goal for that game is to make that entry point really accessible, which means removing some of those constraints around building and assembling miniatures and then painting them and then putting them on the table.
Hmm.
So for a game like Underworlds, I think it's entirely appropriate to not have that requirement.
Yep.
I also think that incentivizing players who wish to take that extra step, which is exactly what the Grand Clash does, it gives out extra prizes for those people.
That- It depends, because I have seen it that if you come with a painted warband, it's X number of dollars cheaper or X percentage cheaper.
I've seen that done, yeah.
So I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I get why the organisers do that. It's obviously to encourage the rest of the hobby that it potentially attaches itself to. And it does make a lot of sense, particularly when you're looking to use it as a gateway product. But
do you think that's borderline shaming people for not doing it, or penalising people for not doing it?
Look, potentially, I hadn't really considered it in that light.
Neither had I until we just started talking about it. I was prior to this, I was like, oh no, that's kind of cool. It's encouraging people to paint their warbands, but actually, is it? Yeah, rather than encouraging people to paint their warbands, is it punishing them for not?
I suppose the biggest argument for painting Underworlds warbands is that they're generally speaking between 3 and 7. I don't think there's anything bigger than 7 at the moment. Maybe 8?
Yeah.
Miniatures per warband. And some of the latest ones are only 3s and 4s.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Stormcast are 3s from memory. And for the average... hobbyist who's been in the hobby a while, that's a nothing number in terms of painting armies.
I can tell you, if I have to paint the models in order to play that game, I'm not playing it.
Yeah. Well, the only reason they're getting painted, your warband at least, is because I'm painting them.
Well, I've been waiting how long?
Oh, technicalities.
Mm.
I
don't like that warband anymore. So you might want to start painting a different one. I'm going back to my old one. But anyway.
Well, they're almost painted, so you're fine.
Yeah. But I just think, for me, I'm not painting them.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the skills to do it.
And I think that's...
If I'm not good at something, then I'm not doing it.
I think that's part of the hurdle, though, that psychologically speaking, for a lot of people, in that painting miniatures is unlike anything else. Unless you're very artsy to begin with, you're not going to have any reference point in what you're doing. So you're relying on other people giving you that information and teaching you.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the painting lessons that you can get that are free are obviously at Games Workshops and Warhammer stores. Mm. And the guys do a bang up, and girls do a bang up job of providing that service to their customers. But it is, it's a sort of a flying by the seat of your pants tutorial a lot of the time because they are busy in the store. They can only devote so much time to it.
And there's only so much you can cover.
Well, it's also, they give you a Space Marine to paint or a Stormcast Eternal to paint, and then you get home and go, cool, I've got to paint my Skaven Warband.
Mm.
I've just been painting Power Armor. I've just been painting a big Golden Knight. How does what I've just learned at the store relate to what I'm about to do?
Mm.
Which means either...
they're all transferable skills.
Yeah, but I can, when you look at the paint range and you start going, oh, how many paints do I need? And
yeah, that's it.
You know, all of a sudden...
it's completely overwhelming.
Yeah, it's a huge hurdle to sort of overcome. So I get why a lot of people might just go, you know what? I don't have to paint them. There's no requirement for me to win the event to paint them. And I like the fact that the people who do want to paint them can have their own award. That's fine.
Yep.
But I don't have to, so I'm not going to.
Mm.
And
that's why I quite like it. With the you know, with the Grand Clash, that there's a painting award.
Yeah.
And so obviously if you paint your warband, then you're eligible to for that award. And I think I prefer that compared to
the requirement.
Well, no, compared to reducing the price if you come with it painted.
Oh, okay, yeah. So incentivizing it in a way that rewards you for doing extra rather than penalizing those who can't or haven't.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. So that kind of is where the ground floor of this conversation started, was around half of the community saying, well, it's three or four models, paint your friggin' warband. The other half going, they're playing pieces, I don't care about painting them, they're playing pieces. And then the conversation deteriorated where people said, well, what about chess? What about, like, at this point we might as well just be using checkers with numbers on them. Because
well, that is essentially what it is.
Yeah.
They're just markers.
Yeah.
But I will say the only thing that I would add is that I think that from an ease of play perspective, it's probably useful to somehow mark your models as your models.
Absolutely, you know, particularly if you've got two people playing the same warband.
Exactly, that's it. And chances are in an event, you're going to end up with two people playing. And there's no way that you can, you know, sort of modify the models so that you'll stand out or, you know, you don't, because you don't get to choose which models are in that. It is generic.
Yeah.
So having some way to differentiate between yours and your opponent, I think, would be useful.
Yeah.
And I can probably manage to put EB on all of my models so that it stands out that they're mine. But yeah.
No, it's an interesting sort of conversation piece because, like I say, the expectation of half of that community is it's almost just a board game. And I don't mean that to undermine what the game itself is because it's a really good game. But the way half of the community seem to be viewing it is, it's a board game. I put the piece, much like Zombicide, I put the pieces together that I need to put together and I play the game.
Mm.
The other half are treating it as the hobby in and of itself, in its entirety, and going, part of the hobby is building and painting my miniatures before I put them on the table or while, you know, get them done so that they are on the table and finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where a lot of the disconnect comes from, is the people who are primarily gamers compared to primarily hobbyists.
Mm.
And I don't think they're necessarily mutually exclusive, but I do think that some players do sit very heavily on one end of that spectrum or the other. So let's move on to another game that doesn't necessarily require it, which is War Machine.
Mm-hmm.
The Steamroller pack for 2018. Again, all painting requirements were optional. And it's another community that... going back to the late 2000s, when it was really cranking here in Western Australia, we had a number of TOs who didn't bother with the painting requirement, and then they had Ultimates. And Luke set a standard for Ultimates that was everything had to be painted, which meant that the War Machine guys had to paint.
Mm.
And to give them their credit, most of them come along with painted armies to some degree, whether it's fully finished or whether it's on its way, or there might be the odd model that's not done or a unit that's not done. These guys do put a lot of effort in and do try and get them painted. And we've been fortunate with Privateer Press that we were able to reward someone at that event by giving away one of the official Privateer Press painting awards.
That was from Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, that was at Show 2018.
Not at Ultimates.
No.
You were just talking about Ultimates, so.
Yeah. Okay, sorry for that confusion. Anyway, to be fair, though, to Luke, he did give away painting awards at Ultimates for painted armies.
Yeah.
The only difference for us was obviously we were able to get the official ones from Privateer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another game that, due to its early inception, was very heavily marketed towards the game as opposed to the hobby.
Yeah.
And so the expectations of the players were, and they aren't so, you know, they're certainly not as bad as it was back then, where when Luke first put it out there, it was a screaming blue murder. What do you mean I have to paint my toy soldiers?
But it's around the expectations.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're adding in this new expectation when you've been playing for X amount of time and painting is completely optional.
Yeah.
To then add this requirement that it has to be done, it's, you know, it's change and people don't accept change especially well. So I'm not sure that, you know, screaming blue murder is necessarily the nicest analogy, but well, I think being, you know, reacting to that change and that, you know, the new requirement.
Well, like I say, the community these days do a really good job of getting stuff painted. And most of them have embraced that sort of mentality from the late 2000s and have continued it on. Maybe not as rigorously as they were at the time, but...
Yeah, and I know that when I went out to Perth Champs for the first time, because I wasn't aware of that, you know, that painting wasn't a requirement for War Machine, I did find it really different seeing bare plastic models on the table.
Mm. So... I think part of that, which I'll kind of cover when we get to 40K, which I'm going to leave till last, is to do with immersion and what we try and achieve with the 40K standards that we've set. So moving around to pre-painted games, things like X-Wing and Armada.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, painting requirements go out the window there because mm-hmm. they're all pre-painted. I know that in the past, many events have done best painted where people have repainted ships. And again, it's been a standalone thing apart from the scoring.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the beauties of those sorts of games is, yeah, there is no painting required. It is...
And everything looks finished.
Yeah. It's all decent paint jobs. There's nothing outstanding about them, but they're all tabletop ready. And it's another one that sort of skirts that line between board game and tabletop game. Mm-hmm. In this case, the models look finished, but you're playing on a bigger space. So it's another interesting one where... it's more about the game. And yep. that's kind of the pattern that I wanted to try and talk about tonight, was the ones that have focused themselves on the game mechanics and the competition and the, you know, the actual game itself are the ones that seem to have the most relaxed painting requirements or painting standards, if you will.
Mm.
Because when we start moving through to some of the other game systems, things like Malifaux,
mm-hmm.
A lot of the packs that come out of the Malifaux, again, don't require painting, but it's heavily encouraged, or it is outright required.
Mm.
Anything at Warhammer World for their official events has to be painted as soon as you hit Games Workshop, again, in the form of AOS or 40K.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of the major events, at least around the world, are starting to more and more and more require painted armies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how that's enforced and... the standard of finished painted is another matter entirely, but we are seeing a drive towards that immersive painted army for those bigger war games, things like Bolt Action, things mm-hmm. like 40K and Age of Sigma. So when we start talking about why we do what we do for 40K specifically, because that's our number one game in terms of the support that we provide at the moment, we do require... painted armies.
Mm-hmm.
For 2018, we gave people a little bit of leniency while we started enforcing this at different events, where they got a pass, essentially a one-strike policy where you turned up with unpainted models and then you were told to start taking them off at the next events. And some people...
Just to expand on that a little bit, so the one-strike policy was basically... if you come along... so although it's in all of our players' pack that states that all of the models must be painted so that from 3 feet away they look to be complete. If a player did perhaps bring something that wasn't painted, then they would be allowed to play with it at one event. However, second and subsequent events after they've had one warning, if, you know, if we find out that there are unpainted models on the table, they'll be asked to remove them from the table.
Yeah. And what Emma mentions just then is really important is the 3-foot rule. Mm. It used to be the 3-colour rule, but I just don't think that the 3-colour rule works particularly well, because we've had it happen where players have spray painted a model one colour and then gotten 2 paint brushes and put a dot of one colour and a dot of another colour and claimed 3-colour painting.
Yeah. We also have some where the models don't have 3 colours on them.
Yeah. Things like painting Raven Guard Space Marines where they're black on black on black.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, I've even seen it done with a toothbrush where someone's literally gotten 3 colours side by side on a palette, dipped the paintbrush in it, and literally run it down the front of each model. And that's one of the reasons that we moved away from that sort of 3-colour minimum, because it just got too hard to police, and, you know, intent becomes a factor then. And so we've kind of moved down the road that's much closer to what Warhammer World does, in that they set standards which say it's essentially base colours. Whatever colours the model is going to finish as, if its armour is going to be red, then put the red down, the base red down. If it's going to be blue helmets, you put the blue down, and skin colour, and so on and so forth.
Add your, you know, whatever kind of metal shade you're doing for any kind of weapons, and you're done.
And then obviously, yeah, tidy up the base, edge the base. Ideally, it gets texture as well. But at that point, if you're walking past the table just casually, you're an observer and you're just wandering up and down the rows, and you glance at a table and you can see that there's a whole bunch of blue Space Marines, that their bases are repainted brown, it looks like it's a bunch of painted Space Marines.
Consistent and cohesive unit.
Yeah. It's not until you obviously get up close and start picking them up, or, you know, have a good look, that you realise that they're not finished. But
none of these guys have eyes.
Well, they have them sculpted, hopefully. Yeah. Otherwise, there's problems. But the goal is to, you know, there's a little bit of immersion there that's intended, where part of the joy of these games, at least for me, and I know for a number of other hobbyists, is immersing yourself in the game itself. So rather than having grey plastic across the table...
Rather than immersing yourself in the game itself, it's immersing yourself in the hobby.
Yes.
And an element of that hobby is painting the models.
Yeah, and the stories that go with them. You know, this my grey Space Marines just killed your orc doesn't sound anywhere near as cool as my Raven Guard infiltrator. And you've got the Raven Guard models on the table, and they've got all their filigree on them. And admittedly, they're all black, but you can, at that point, painting black's really hard, as strange as that sounds. But
photographing black is really hard as well.
That is true. Yeah, so I think the what we're trying to achieve there is encouraging all parts of the hobby for our events.
Yeah.
Because ultimately that's kind of where this game system started way back when, and Games Workshop's always tried to foster the hobby component of it as much as the game itself. And there were a number of years there where they almost all but abandoned the game in terms of the support for it, where they release a codex and not touch it for 5 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're being really engaged with the game itself, but they're also really engaged with the hobby, because we're now getting videos, and you've got the app that starts teaching you what colours you need to highlight and shade things. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's other motives for them doing that, but it really does help new players getting involved to learn how to paint and learn how to put stuff on the table that is fully painted. So let's go back to the original question. Why should someone paint their army?
Because it's in the players' pack, and if you don't, then you can't come.
That's probably the best reason for any of our events, at least, is reading the players' pack and finding out what those standards are straight off the bat.
Yeah.
Because it does vary game system to game system, and it does vary organiser to organiser.
Yeah.
And that's just here in Perth, let alone worldwide.
But, that was a flippant response. To answer your actual question, why do we do it? As much as we talk about how the overall hobby is important to us, it's not about us, and we don't do it because we think it looks cool to have painted armies on the table. We do it because the community at large thinks it's cool to have painted armies on the table, because the comments and the responses from players are that playing against fully painted armies adds to the experience of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we're here for, is to try and create the events that the players in the community want.
Yeah.
So we're respectful when we run War Machine events were respectful that they don't necessarily have fully painted armies. However, because we still value it, that's why we went and tried to organize the artist awards for Show 2018 for War Machine.
Yeah.
But we were still respectful of the fact that that's not what they normally do, and so we didn't require the fully painted army for that system.
Yeah. I think that's ultimately that's a lot of it. We've covered it a couple of times now. Mm. It ultimately comes down to the expectations of that community.
Yeah.
And I suppose the point at which that product is sold at and what the company providing it expects of it. And I think that things like War Machine and Underworlds, where they've deliberately been positioned in such a way that the community isn't expected painted stuff, is actually great because it encourages new players. But it also is, particularly for something like Underworlds, where the models cross over into Age of Sigmar, it's actually now creating conflicts because there are those hobbyists who are coming from either 40K or AOS with painted stuff expecting the same standard to be upheld.
But that's around managing your expectations. And so as tournament organisers, we have a responsibility to manage those expectations, and we do that through the Players Pack.
Yep.
And I know that we've just done a podcast talking about the importance of reading a Players Pack, so I'm sounding like a broken record, but this is why we write the Players Pack, in order to manage those expectations.
But then you get these situations like I've seen on Facebook, where there are players actively... Shame's not... I don't necessarily think that's the right word for it, but we'll use it because that's the word that's been used in the article. Shaming other players, even though the Players Pack says you don't need it, and even though the game system itself is set up in such a way that it's not needed, there are players out there who are going out of their way to go paint your warband. Why haven't you painted your warband? It's only 3 models. Paint your warband. It's so much better than green plastic. Paint your warband.
It depends how you're doing it. You know, like...
Yeah.
There's, and I think we said on one of the Facebook Lives that I have a really dry, unusual sense of humour, and the more that I'm making fun of you, it generally means the more that I like you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was teasing you earlier because my warband still hasn't been painted, and pull your finger out, why hasn't it been done yet?
Titan.
It's not the Titan. You've had the Titan for how long? We've had the warband for how long? Don't you go Titan. Oh,
show,
my God.
Masters, holiday, Titan. There's my reasons.
I'm not arguing this with you now. Oh, my goodness. But my point is, it depends how you do it. Whether or not are you mucking around going, like, what's going... Particularly for hobbyists. So people who generally play 40K and Age of Sigmar, who are used to painting models, you know, then it's one thing to mess around with them and tease and joke and say, why isn't your warband painted? Come on, get it painted.
Oh, yeah. If I rocked up to an Underworlds event without a painted warband...
Yeah.
The guys would rip me.
Yeah. But not in a nasty way.
No, no.
But it's also something very different to, you know, to add that actual negativity to that and to do it to people who are not necessarily hobbyists within a gaming system that has the expectation of painting models.
Yeah. I definitely don't think it should be encouraged that people should have to feel obliged to paint those models in those game systems where it's not a thing. Because I think that all you're doing at that point is alienating a really potential pool of players to come and play at events and make events better.
Yeah. It is a shame that Games Workshop, when they released Underworlds, they didn't actually do it similar to Star Wars in that...
Pre-painted.
Yeah.
I think there's a level of production cost attached to it. I mean, when you start talking...
I'm sure there is, yeah.
Well, compare it. I mean, if you look at X-Wing, for example, most of the ships in X-Wing cost between 25 and 60 Australian dollars, depending on which ship you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're buying the starter and you're only going to play Imperial or Rebel, you're getting a couple of TIE fighters and an X-Wing. You're still going to have to now go and spend probably another $50 to $100 to get the bare minimum you need to even play 100-point game. Now, the points have all gone up in version 2.0, so I'm still talking from first edition experience. But if they did it with Shadespire, I think what we'd end up with is you'd end up having to buy a warband. Because obviously Shadespire is fixed warbands, whereas X-Wing isn't.
No, I know.
And that's, I think, the confusion that it would create, because you'd be going, okay, cool, I need 4 Fire Slayers for my warband, and they're $55 Australian for a warband, and that's all the cards and the miniatures.
Yeah.
If they were pre-painted, you'd be looking at $150+.
Yeah.
And I think that just puts it out the realms of the average sort of entry-level game. It just becomes just way too expensive. Mm. At that point, you're paying... You know, you're actually better off going and buying a box of Fire Slayers off the shelf and making the 4 models up.
Well, not really, because they're not painted.
No, but...
That's sort of my whole point.
But you're also getting 3 times as many models at that point as well. So it is an interesting one where if Underworlds had gone that way, I don't know how they could have produced it and marketed it anyway.
Yeah.
But I do think that... going down that road of being really negative about those game systems where it is not a thing is only being a detriment to the community. Mm. And, you know, when we go to 40K again, we do require painted models. And I think on one hand, it's a really good thing where they're the guys who just paint the bare minimum they have to and they put them on the table and they're fine with that. But then you get the guys who just go
nuts.
Just absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
And then they start competing with each other event to event, and you start seeing more and more elaborate display boards and, you know, really...
Display boards that all work together from different people and you know, add to the overall theme. Yeah, it's
one
awesome.
One of our patrons, Alan, with his Tyranids, his display board attached to another member of the Toy Soldier Cartel's board, Steve, their two boards that show linked up. But on the display board, he had 2 Forge World models that were worth... probably $2,000 combined. They weren't part of the army. They were part of the display board.
Yep.
And that sort of, you know, if you've seen one of our locals, Anthony with his Tau, or Pete Platel with his sort of Imperial Forces, they've all got these massive display boards. Aaron Jaw with his Angry Marines.
Mm-hmm.
They almost one up each other each time it comes around.
Mm.
And the standard of painting is absolutely awesome.
Yep.
But again, I don't think the average hobbyist sits in that world. Like, I certainly don't think I sit in that world. I wouldn't want to try and compete.
No, but it's still quite
them.
Inspiring.
It is. And that's the thing. I go and go, wow, I really would love to do something like that. I might not be able to repeat it. But
I go, wow, I'd really love you to do something like that for me.
So, yeah, it was really interesting to see the very polarizing views. And there were people in this conversation that were just going, like, it's 3 models. Why aren't you painting it? And they couldn't wrap their heads around the idea of not painting it. And
I would look, and I know I said earlier that if I had to paint it, I wouldn't play. I would much rather play with painted models, but it is just, I do not have the skills to do it.
I don't think it's you don't have the skills to do it. It's that you don't have the skills to do it now.
Yeah. And if I'm not good at something, I have to be good at it straight away. I don't like working at things.
No.
So if it doesn't come easily and naturally, nah, move on.
Fair enough.
Lots of things out there. I'll find something I am good at. It's not that. So I know that I'm not alone with that.
No. And I'm sure there's plenty of people who... potentially could be very good painters who paint their first model, look at it and go, why does it not look like the internet tutorials and the photos and stuff?
Yeah.
And look, as a kid, before we had all this information, I remember sat there with White Dwarf, I'm going to say 127.
Right.
And...
we all believe you. You do not need to go and find it.
It's the one with the Jess Goodwin's first Aspect Warriors in it. It's the UK White Dwarf 127. It'd be from 1991, something like that. And I remember sat there for hours with one Aspect Warrior from a blister pack of 5 trying to get it to look like the heavy metal team had painted it.
Yeah. You were also painting it with gloss house paint.
So no. By this stage, I was using Ralpathra paints. They weren't Games Workshop ones. These were the cheapo model paints, not the good ones. And the worst thing about it then, so I bought a model for Fantasy Battle back then, Tyrion, the original Tyrion model. And they did a 2-page tutorial on how to paint him. And I bought that white dwarf. It was $7. It was a really expensive painting tutorial as far as I was concerned back in 1991 or mm-hmm. 2 or whenever it was. And it told you what colours.
For our younger listeners, that's when we used to have 1 and 2 cent lollies.
Mars bars were 50 cents. 30 cents.
I was going to say, yeah. Went in with 50 cents to the lolly shop. You got a big bag full.
Anyway, showing our age here.
I know. Back when a bob were worth a bob many moons ago.
But so Mike McVee had written this article on how to paint it. And it was you buy these 2 golds and these 2 washes and you achieve this.
Sure you do.
And yeah, you didn't achieve that. I'm still pretty proud of that paint job all these years later. But
I bet you're not if you had a look at it now.
I know exactly where that model is.
Yeah.
But it's a... It's one of those ones where you've got these literally trained professional artists who are doing this these days. And back then, they were still professional artists.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first paint your first miniatures, particularly when you go back far enough, when there was no internet and there was no comparison, you looked at it and went, it's taken me 10 hours to do this one model and it's still not as good as what they've done. Oh my God, I'm never doing this again.
Yep.
At least these days, you've now got... With social media, it's very easy to get feedback and... improve at a
There's
rapid speed.
There's also lots of YouTube clips that you can watch, pause, rewind.
Yeah.
You know, watch, pause, rewind.
So it's... I do think that painting is way more accessible now than it was 20 years ago or 25 years ago.
And there are also... 30 years ago. How many different colour paints available. So you're not having to mix your own paint colours and try and remember or try and measure out 8 drops of something from Games Workshop paint pot. Or, you know, there's lots more washes available now. There's lots more textures available now, which were things that had to be created and made yourself a couple of decades ago.
We've gone from what would have been 40 to 50 colours to 300.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
And there's new ones coming out almost every release. Yeah. So I do think that painting is way more accessible now, and maybe that's part of the culture shift we've seen within the hobby community is that painting is more accessible. There's more support for how to do it and how to learn it now. And you combine that with the general community's feel around the bigger tabletop games that you should be painted.
Mm.
Maybe that flow through is the other side of what something like Underworlds is experiencing, where they've kind of created their own conflict in the production of the game because they've spent so many years encouraging people to paint and hobby. And then they've released a game that doesn't require it. Yeah. And now you've got half the community going, well, I don't need to. And the other half going, but you should.
Yeah.
Because we've had years of it indoctrinated into us that paint your models. So it's really been an interesting one to kind of... Like I've spent 24 plus hours rolling it around in my head trying to figure out the angles for it. But I mean, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. It's like we said at the very start, it's you do you.
Yeah.
If you do it respectfully. Yeah. If you and your buddies aren't interested in painting and you're only interested in playing the games, and there are plenty of people who fall into that category, and you're not interested in going to events and you're quite happy to just pull your models out and play games at home or at any of the stores that you might happen to play at that don't have any sort of requirements, and you're happy doing that, don't let anyone shame you into thinking you have to spend thousands of dollars on paint or learn how to paint or pay someone else to paint it for that matter. If, on the other hand, and we've got a friend of ours who wants to get back into tournament play, hasn't got a painted army. He's now in the process of getting a commission painter to do it for him because he doesn't feel he has the time or the skill to do it.
Hmm.
So he's got a target he wants to achieve, and the only way for him
to... He's decided to choose a faster commission painter than the one that I chose.
Who did you pick?
You.
Ah.
Dork.
I only do 2 or 3 a year.
Yeah, well, apparently mine weren't ones that you picked last year.
No, but I enjoyed the commissions I did last year. So, so I think that is kind of the crux of the issue, particularly because it is from the same universe and from the same company.
Mm.
They've spent so many years setting that expectation to just turn around and go, no, you don't need to do that anymore. And I think that's ultimately where the conflict has arisen from for Underworlds.
Mm.
Because I know there are plenty of tournaments who don't require it for Age of Sigmar and for 40K for that matter.
Yeah.
But I still think the average attendee will try and have painted models for those events. Mm-hmm. Maybe not all of them, but, you know, they will make an active effort to have painted armies.
Yeah, and it is very much expected, I think.
I think the community expects it a lot more these days than they would have. Although, like we were actually talking about this a while ago now, the very first tournament here in Western Australia was 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And when the players pack came out with your ticket that you got mailed to you back then, it included a clause that said everything had to be fully painted.
Mm.
And it was, holy crap, I have to paint my army? Mm. Like, wow, okay. And so that very first tournament, which must have only been 36 players, 40 players, something like that, because no one had ever been to one before.
Yeah, that's it.
Everything was painted. And it was awesome because even me and the guys who I gamed with regularly, we didn't have painted armies.
No.
We were painting what we felt like playing, you know, and from off the back of that, that's when Tim and I started our arms race where it had to be fully painted before we used it. And then at some point in the mid to late 2000s, that sort of standard disappeared a little bit in Perth. Mm. And it's only been over the last, probably the late, very, very late 2000s and early 2010s where that started coming back with Ultimates because people were painting armies to meet Ultimate standards and then obviously having those for other events.
Yeah.
Or they were working towards those for Ultimates at the end of the year. So I definitely think the hobbyists of a community do have their own expectations sort of wax and wane at any given time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do think, though, ultimately, if you don't want to paint it, don't paint it.
Yeah.
But don't then get narky and upset if you can't go to an event because it's not painted.
Yeah. And what we were going to be talking about tonight was around self-sabotaging. So have a think about why it is that you're choosing not to paint your models as well.
Yeah, we might cover that in another topic another day. Yeah,
definitely.
Because
I did a whole heap of research on it, so we're definitely recording that episode. So.
But yeah, it's certainly a contentious issue within the community, particularly for Underworlds at the moment. Mm. I definitely prefer... Let me rewind that. I've never taken an unpainted army to a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I have borrowed models for one tournament that I went to. That was I hassled the player in question to make sure they were painted beforehand. So that even though they didn't match, they were still painted. But that's a personal choice from me. Mm-hmm. I've played at tournaments where the opponent's armies aren't painted or they're half painted or they're fully painted.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, if they're allowed to be at that event by the organizer, then it's not my place to have a go at them for not painting. I've done it to friends who I know really well who've come to an event and gone, come on, man. Like, really? Yeah.
What's going on?
But, I think as long as you're meeting the standards that the TOs are expecting and you're happy with what you're doing, then I don't think anyone has the right to criticize you for that.
Mm. No, that's it.
So,
takes all sorts.
Yeah. Well, we might wrap this one up and then come back in just a second to wrap up the episode. Right, we're back. And we're done.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an interesting one, and I've got one last anecdote to share on painting. And
let me share my anecdote first.
Okay.
It's not about painting, but it's to do with the intro and the little clip that you used.
Oh, I love that clip. That's one of my favorite parts of that movie.
So I was interviewing today, and I had an interview with someone, and I was like, I had an inkling about, I was just trying to pull out anything I possibly could to give this person the best possible opportunity. So we got to the end and I said to them, if you were a colour, what colour would you be and why? Which is not normally the type of interview question that I asked. And the person sat there and just looked at me. You could see them going, is she serious? And the response was, black? Because it's cool.
Sometimes very, very dark grey.
Yeah.
God, Batman's awesome in that movie. No, I'm going to leave you with an anecdote on having to play it painted outside of tournaments, because we do our annual Apocalypse game and I am madly trying to get this Warlord Titan to a standard for that event, and that event that we have requires paint.
Yes. It also requires you guys to organize a date.
I know, and I'm deliberately putting that off because...
No, stop putting it off.
Because I want to get enough paint on this model.
It was supposed to be between Christmas and New Year's. Now almost in February.
But two of the guys work shifts and it all got very hard to organize in that period of time. And then there's been weddings and other stuff going on. And
excuses.
And I'm trying to get enough time to put some paint on this damn model so that I get to play it. Because the Warlord is now, for all intents and purposes, assembled.
Doesn't have any of the armor plates on.
No. So there's three boxes sat beside Emma at the moment with all the guns and the sort of the loose stuff that has to stay off. But it does stand by itself. It used a meter worth of 3mm brass rod to put it all together. And it used 11 packs of epoxy to go together. And I've just got to do the last of the milli part for it now. Well, not now, but... over the next day or so, and let that set, and then I can actually get started on the painting.
After you get this podcast edited.
After I get this podcast episode edited and published. Mm-hmm. But those sorts of events can be really good motivators, where you've got a big model or a unit that you've always wanted to paint, but you don't want to do it for a tournament. If you've got a friendly game where you are able to encourage people to paint stuff, then you can pick a unit that you've always wanted to paint and use it as a motivation for you to get that painted. Because I know that motivation can be a big factor in why things don't get painted. So it's always a good one to have a target and a goal, and sometimes a tournament's a great one for that. But sometimes your friend's hassling you for not being able to fill that model.
Providing you're doing it in a friendly...
Yeah.
And I'm just reiterating.
So, my big toy is going to get at least the base colours on it, which is what the event requires.
Whether it gets anything after that point.
Oh, it'll definitely get finished, but for that particular game, that's what I'm going for at the moment. So I've got a couple of rattle cans to get the undercoats on, and then I've got to sort the airbrush colours out to get all the base colours down. So that'll be this weekend's job, I think. But we'll see how that goes.
This weekend, but sure, we'll see how that goes.
Anyway, we're going to leave it there, guys. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the episode. We will see you in 2 weeks' time for the next podcast, and in a week's time for the next live, just before First Blood 2019 for its fourth annual running. Mm-hmm. Until then, stay safe, enjoy your hobby, and we hope to see you at an event soon.
And of course, happy gaming.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.